account. And I thought my library books were due.
Oh, shucks.
Okay.
Are we expecting a call?
Record, record.
I'll look for you.
Very seriously, I was really so touched to be invited to be part of this this amazing effort. I hope there aren't too many of you who have been doing this since 9 a.m. because I would imagine by this time you'd be like well glazed. You know, you'd probably, like the guy, you know, Woody Allen said, and he took Evelyn Wood's speed reading course, and he finished War and Peace in 45 minutes, said, it's about Russia. So, after 14 hours of, or whatever it is, 10 or 12 hours of nonstop Torah, you know, it's like,
I think he spoke about Judaism.
Don't know what we're talking about, but I'm really touched to be invited, and especially when I look. Luckily, I did not look at the speakers list until I came tonight, because I would have been that would have finished me off. I would have been totally intimidated and wondered, you know, like. Is your social calendar really that challenged that you're here with me? But I didn't look at the list. I did make the mistake of davening mincha near Rabbi Glasser's source book. That was really good. I didn't know what all those books were. I was really impressed. That was really good. So I only have one book. And in that book, I only have one chapter, so I hope you'll forgive me. There's almost nothing more ubiquitous in the whole season of the Yomim Noroim, extending, you know, the Yomim Noroim by the broadest definition, the Rosh Chodesh Elul to Shemini Atzeres definition. There is nothing more ubiquitous than the Perek of Tehillim, which is our companion during that period. And considering the fact that Perek Chav Zayin is such a central liturgical element in the period of the Yomim Noroim, of the autumn holidays, it's remarkable just how difficult it is to come to a stable reading of that parak. In what was far from a scientific perusal of the sources, you find such wonderful variations as the Malbim's sense that the first half, and as we'll be seeing, everyone must begin with the premise that the David Hashem Orev Yishi breaks in the center. The Malbim's sense is that that break means that everything in the first part is a kind of an introduction, a settling of the landscape, a dealing with external need, so that the real agenda of the psalmist can then be addressed in the second half, which is the nature of sorting out his relationship. His relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. Other Mefarshim see the first half as a kind of a fugue state, a kind of a dreamy state, and then the second half as an awakening into reality. I'm going to become a little more textual in just a moment, but basically I'm going to suggest another alternative to these two readings, one which is perhaps a little more edgy. I wouldn't suggest this kind of departure from what are the accepted readings from the classical commentaries. I wouldn't even suggest it if we were in, you know, in a more exact field like halacha. Although even in terms of suggesting new pathways in the reading of biblical passages, even there, the field is not without its cautionary stories. They say, I don't know whether this is true, they say that the Chafetz Chaim, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, kept Hemek Dovar, the Netziv's commentary on the Chumash, he kept it in the attic, because in his opinion the Netziv had been too creative and had allowed himself to depart from the classic pathways hewn by Rashi and the Ramban and the other Rishonim, and Chafetz Chaim thought that that might be a little bit excessive. Nevertheless, I suppose we could, the Hemek Dover did write the book, right? The Netziv did write the book, so I mean, how bad could it be? So a certain license when one is talking about biblical non-halachic text, I think is there's some latitude, and one could argue that that is the essence of Shivim Panim LaTorah. And it may be, in fact, that the particular reading that I am suggesting is one which grows out of categories of sensitivity that are particularly acute at our particular moment in history, and that the acuteness of some of those issues leads us to see a dimension of the text, of David HaMelech's work, in a new light. So let's first address ourselves to the break. Now, I didn't ask everyone to bring in a sitter with L'David Hashem or V'Yishi. I assume that, you know, at some point in this season, you know, you've actually gotten through the whole thing, you know, as opposed to that maybe if you're Svardik, you're used to saying all the words, as opposed to us Ashkenazim, who, you know, we're good on first lines and last lines, but don't ask us to read the middle out loud, because we get a little, you know, shaky there. But, and when you read the summaries of Perek Chaf Zayin of L'David Hashem, it is very common to hear contained within those summaries the word confidence, right? That it is the confident voice of the believer that is represented in this perek. And I believe that that is true to a certain point. And what is remarkable in the perek is precisely the collapse of that confidence at a certain absolutely measurable moment. And then that collapse draws us back, number one, to see where it began, the nature of the confident voice, the nature of what remains after what I would call the break, the crisis, and then something like a resolution in the enigmatic final verses of the perek. So a helpful thing to think about is just that the whole shooting match is about 14 verses. So it's quite easy to work the numbers. So the beginning, what we might call the confident portion, is verses 1 through 6. And then as we read those verses, I would like to watch for two different things. Number one, of course, listen to voice and audience. In other words, to whom is this addressed? And this question will lead us, or will explain, the title that I gave this. I really just gave that so you would think I was going to talk about something, you know, something sexy, you know, in the Jewish week or something like that, which of course I'm not. But, you know, people who write these kind of titles, we never really intend to talk about anything that interesting. We just want to get you in the door. And we rely on the fact that you're too embarrassed to get up and go, this guy's not going to talk about anything good anyway, so I'm getting out of here. We rely on that to sort of trap you in your seats. But you'll see then where my title comes from. So the first thing I'd like you to look at is the question of voice and audience. And in voice and audience, you know, if you use the various parts of the sentence, you know, who is speaking, to whom is he speaking, and about what is he speaking. Second thing to look for in that first section are what I might refer to as verbs and nouns of comfort and almost to the point of aesthetic appreciation. Right? And I hope I can show you what I mean in a moment as we approach the precipice, which is that crack between 6 and 7. So if you just, I mean, you could listen with me as we just review the familiar words. L'David Hashem orivi yishi, mimi irot. Hashem ma'oz chayai, mimi efchad. Now here, of course, in his brilliant precision, the Malbim works with the terms of yira and pachad, which are paralleled to one another. And of course, in Kedarko Bakodesh, the Malbim always sees a kind of a nuanced contrast between the terms. And he tells us that Yira, fear in this context, is the fear of the known. In other words, the known adversary. And Pachad is the fear of the unknown. We might call it, maybe we would translate Yira is fear and Pachad is anxiety. The anxiety that something may be lurking out there which is malevolent but of which we are unaware, and so we're sort of at every moment if you will we're on a hair trigger waiting for an unpleasant, unfortunate surprise. But in this one, there is a sense, you know, I don't have anything to be afraid of. Neither the known or the unknown. Why? Because Hashem Orivi Yishi and Hashem Ma'oz Chayai. Ma'oz means a stronghold, a place where I am impregnable. Oriviishi is more a light, and salvation is more about a kind of an ambient security, the moving around without concern. So let me ask you already the early question, and you'll see it borne out. What's the nature of the discourse here? Who's speaking to whom and about what? This is the audience participation portion of our show. Little did I know that they gave me the visiting Turkish students delegation, and none of you know what I've been talking about the whole time, but you were fascinated by my tie, and therefore have been held with rapt attention. Do we have any English speakers in the room? Who is speaking here? David is speaking, and how do you know that an individual is speaking?
First person.
Because he's, well, first person and possessive. Right? He's speaking about Ori, Yishi, things that I possess. To whom is he speaking? Well, let's figure this, let's start from the end, make it easy on you. To whom is he not speaking? He's clearly not speaking to God, because he's speaking about God, right? So there is some kind of an audience here, one presumes a human audience to whom he is describing his relationship with God. And it is a relationship with God which is already being discussed in a kind of an absolute sense, especially if you use the Malbim. Mimi Iram, Mimi Efchad means, you know, I have nothing to worry about. I'm good. I'm good. Right? It's like that great moment in Samuel Beckett's Watt, where it says, Watt looked up at heaven and down at earth. If there were two things in the world that Watt could not stand, it was heaven and earth. So Mimi, between no Yira, no Pachad. I'm not afraid of anyone I know, and I'm not afraid of anyone I don't know. Yes, Tzadik, what's your name?
Ira.
Ira, yes.
He's speaking to people that are going to have to rely on him and trust in him, and at the same time, share in his trust in God.
Where do you get
have to do something for him?
That's right. Where do you get that
he
from?
He says that he's relying on God to be able to do. I think because it says, you know, my enemy is the one camp around me.
I didn't get that.
It
yet.
Doesn't matter.
But who you? Where are you getting this? What's your proof about the nature of the audience? No, I mean it's plausible. If you want to understand that LeDavid here is
God, even when everything else has abandoned him.
No.
Even when he's in a situation of tremendous vulnerability.
How do you know that?
Because he says, you know, my parents will.
I didn't get there. No, you can't do that. You cannot feed the tail of this snake into its mouth.
Okay. Well, other than the text, where would you like me to bring my?
Well, I would like you to bring nothing if it's not there. That's okay. I didn't raise your hand, Ira. Unless it was just an itch or something, you know. People do that. Now, the one thing I just want to rescue
sure.
Shards of your crashing and burning question. The very fact that the Perek begins with LeDavid, and David is always, I mean, aside from being the composer, LeDavid is an historical figure. He is a king, he is a general. Now, you might plausibly want to read, in other words, you could read this, I'm just saying it's not necessarily argued in the context, you could argue that this is a general addressing his army and giving them a sense of well-being. It's a coach's pep talk, so to speak, before they enter the fray. You could read it that way. I think you'd be leaning very heavily on the LeDavid, because I'm not seeing evidence, and I'm going to... The things that you are mentioning, will be clear, are not part of the discourse about God. Those are all part of another kind of discourse. So the only proofs that I would want you to be bringing, I'd prefer we actually read them, but... Stay in the first 6 psukim for the time being, okay? Forgive me I've just been watching a whole lot of Don Rickles YouTubes, and that just is completely corrupting. It's just like you just, you know, like decimate people for the sake of a quick laugh. And as far as I know, he had no Olam Haba to speak of. I don't know what he would do there, since they don't serve drinks, to the best of my knowledge. But oh, that'll go great on YU Torah. Oh, can I please buy all of these for my birthday? Okay. And the next verse, let's just get a little more of this in hand. Bikrov alai mureim. The word krov is always interesting because it partakes of two different concepts, of the notion of karov and krav, which is conflict. So it means a kind of a menacing approach. All right, bikrov alai mureim leechol es bisari. Now leechol es bisari is nice because it infuses. A metaphoric imagery without exactly saying it. What metaphoric imagery is being introduced kind of from the back door here? If you're talking about an enemy who eats your flesh, we're not talking about various islands in the South Seas where cannibals are an issue. So what are we talking about? The flesh-eating enemies?
Wow.
We're introducing imagery that that really invokes wild beasts, right? Which at the time, which in biblical times was still very serious, right? There were still lions in Judea, certainly bears. Assyrian brown bear was ubiquitous enough that it was taking care of people who made fun of Elisha. I just warn you, as a balding rabbi, I would like to know what that guy in the mountains said about his rabbi's haircut just before that black bear got him. Those of you who clearly are not following the news because you're sitting around here learning Torah all the time. Okay? Sarai v'oivayli, heima choshlu v'nafalu. They stumbled and fell. Notice a little bit of past tense, possibly, that he's saying, before he wasn't afraid of anyone attacking him. Now he's recalling that anyone who did attack me, right, even though I was attacked by wild beasts. Now, wild beasts are also nice because they have a stealthy approach, right? So they might fall in the pachad category. And, you know, they approach with stealth, and you don't always see them coming. Now, the next thing is very interesting. Im tachane olai machane. Lo yirali bi. If I see it, now machane is used, for example, in Phoenician, to be both a camp and an army. Right? Those, and even in Tanakh, you see that machanecha kadosh means your military camp, right? Even if an entire army were encamped against me, go back to the Malbim's theory, well, that's a real and present danger. Lo yirali bi. It couldn't make me afraid. Because when he starts, he talks about his, you know, Rosh Shalom and I, we're just like that. I don't even care. You could put an army there. I don't care. Im tokum olai milchama, and if that camp became active and came against me in war, bezos ani voteach, it would not for a moment dislodge my perfect sense of trust. And zos, most mefarshim say, points backward, right, to the, because there is a little problem with reference, because zos usually you would think is going to be pointing to something that's going to be mentioned in the next verse. But the next verse starts, Acha sha'alti me'es Hashem. So we never hear what the zos is, b'zos ani boteach, unless the zos is a backward reference. The zos is saying, this relationship that I have with God, right, of O Riviyishi, Ma'oz Chayai, I'm good in all of these circumstances. And then that strange shift. And this is the shift still within what I would call the confident portion. And this shift is, in a sense, the other side of David. Because he has shown how his relationship with God is going to serve him in conflict situations, is going to provide him with confidence. But now he's going to talk about the content of that relationship. And he's going to say, Acha sho'alti me'es Hashem. I ask only one thing of God. Now, you know what? Everyone reads this verse as some kind of a distillation of the experience of faith. You know, if I can be in God's house, if I can be in God's presence, I don't want anything else. Acha sha'alti. I think that this verse, and I would argue, has a darker side. Because, well, I'll back you up. When we view the classic forms of prayer, right? The classic Amida structure, and we speak about Shevach, Bakosha, and Hodah. We begin with praise, and then we express need, and then we express thanks. What's the nature of Bakosha? Now, you might tell me that Bakosha is shopping. You know, here's what I need, God. You know, Cousin Tilly has an ingrown toenail. Riff away, new please. Right? My son just started a business. I don't think it's going anywhere because he's working with that idiot brother-in-law of his. But Baruch Aleinu. Right? My Hadassah troop is going to Israel. Bilirushalayim ircha brach mim tashu. Right? So it... But that is such a primitive, nonsensical approach that Bakosha is where we go to shop with God. Bakosha is not shopping with God. Bakosha is a broad-based acknowledgement of our vulnerability in every possible area that counts. Right? So suppose a person would get to bracha number 4, Ata chonein le'adam das, and he would say, you know what? Let's can the middle 11. Ach ha'sha'alti meis Hashem. I think I can, I just need one thing. There is a presumption that in all of the other areas I can assume that my blessings are fixed. I can rely on yesterday's bracha will still be good. Now I'm good. You know anyone who's had someone dear to them very sick, and the person recovers? Maybe they stop saying the name. You think they ever stop saying Rifoeinu Hashem v'nei Rafe? You think they ever stop acknowledging the fact that another day when that person does not relapse is another day of God's active, new, and renewed chesed? So if you read it that way, achas sha'alti me'es Hashem, and we'll get to Bakosha in a moment, is a bit presumptuous. Because it implies a relationship where there is so much, not that I am sure only of God's love, rather that I am sure of the continuity of his protection and of my success and of all of those other things. And listen to the verbs. Acha sha'alti me'es Hashem oso avakesh. Sha'alti avakesh. Wait till when the break comes, you'll see the difference. There is a kind of a, how shall I phrase this? A lack of urgency. You know, I bought a lottery ticket. It'd be nice. You know, I'd like to win the jackpot. A vacation. You ask me what I want. That's what I would use my wish for. Shiv tibeves Hashem kol yemechayai. That I might dwell in Hashem's house all the days of my life. And here, of course, the Mefarshim split like a shattered glass at a wedding, because does the Beis Hashem literally mean the Beis HaMikdash? And does Shifti mean to live within it? Does it mean Yerushalayim? Does it mean Eretz Yisrael? Does it mean in the conceptual presence of Hashem? Whatever it is, I would love that, but Shifti, again, I recall to you, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev Bishalva, Kofatz Olov Rogzo Shal Yosef. There is something about Shifti which is connected with the concept of Shalva, a kind of a quiet, tranquil existence. Lachzos Benoam Hashem. The Noam Hashem, the pleasantness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reminds me of the great Kfira W. You know the great Kfira W? You are all so tamimistic. I love you to death. But when you go out into the rough and tumble world of Jewish ideas, I'll give you a little trick. Two tricks. When somebody refers to a Maamar Chazal as a text, or when someone refers to a Midrash or a Rashi or anything and says, I found a wonderful Midrash. It's wonderful. You know what that means? It means two things. It means it supports my politics, and it means it's aesthetically pleasing to me. It's a W that should be reserved for good scotch and cigars. Chazal are not single malt. Chazal are an electric storm, a tornado, a power to be revered, not to be savored after dinner with chocolate. And Chas v'Shalom, I mean, I'm not reading that much onto David HaMelech, but the notion of Noam Hashem, my, isn't Hashem pleasant? I mean, even within the context of Tehillim, Hine Matovu Manaim Sheves Achim Gam Yachad, I can understand a kind of a fraternal use of pleasantness. But to speak about the encounter with the divine as Noam, I would get very nervous. I mean, David writes it. Now you're going to say that I'm being disrespectful to David. And you will see in a moment, the way I'm reading it is David is setting up a straw man. This is not the real voice of David. You will hear the real voice of David in a moment. David is creating a caricature of a certain kind of religious disposition in this reading. And he goes on, notice just a little bit more. Ki yitzpeneni b'suko b'yom ra'ah. If the world is having a bad day, he will shelter me in his sukkah. You know, I'll be out there, everyone else will be bleaching in the sun. I'll have a comfortable little bower provided for me by the management. Yastireni b'seiser ohalo. He will take me into the cool interior of his tent. Bitsur yiromimeni, and will perch me on a rock, a promontory above the fray. And what will I do from my view on the rock? Ve'ato yorum roshi al oivai sivivosai. I will lift up my head and gaze upon the enemies all around me, or sivivosai mean those who have gathered around me in attack. Now, just one problem with the tzur, you see. What's the problem with the tzur? I'm gazing on my enemies. What else is happening? I am now occupying a public position sponsored by the Ribbono Shel Olam to be his chosen one presiding at the top of the world over everyone else who, like a view from an airplane, have been rendered insects in my gaze. Now, zivchei seruah tells you two things. Normally speaking, when the Tanakh refers to a zevach, what does a zevach mean? Well, it means it's a particular kind of korban. What kind of korban would it normally be?
Shlamim.
What?
Shlamim.
Usually it will be a shlamim, which characterizes... What's your name?
You've given me like three good answers right after. Let's see. Okay, I'm just going to check. You do know it. You know the answers to all my questions. You should at least know what your name is. That's very good.
Very good. You've been trained well. I had a terrible time when I was a kid. My mother sent me off to camp, and she ironed like my name tag like on the back inside of all my underwear. So people would ask me, "What's your name, kid?" And I had to turn around and look. It was so embarrassing. Not to mention the chiropractor bill afterwards. I digress. More goodies for Wayu Torah. As he says, Zevach is usually a korban shlomim, which means that the sponsor participates. Now, we know from that moment, which is debated by the Ramban and the Rishonim, when the Tzilei B'nai Yisrael see the Godhead and then sit down to eat, that the question of whether being in the presence of the Ribon Shel Olam is supposed to stimulate your appetite is an open question in Jewish thinking. But notice what he's offering is zivches and seruah usually means that it has to do with music. There are other interpretations of seruah as well, which have to do with the word ratzon. But because of what comes at the end of the pasuk is more likely. So I will offer the sacrifices that I offer will be sacrifices that leave me with a full stomach and take place, seruah and ashira v'azamra l'Hashem. And I will sing and make music for God. Again, comfort. Enjoyment. There is like an undercurrent that all of this is going to be Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh compatible straight through. And then you turn the corner. And what's the next word? The next words is Shema Hashem Koli Ekra V'choneni V'aneni. What happens to the discourse? Who is he addressing now? Now he's addressing Hashem. From this, I will sing you a song. I will sing him a song. And what is he concerned about now? As soon as you say, Shema Hashem Koli Ekra, put some weight on some of those words for me. If I say Shema Koli, Shema Koleinu, it's all over the place these days. What am I concerned? What is my underlying anxiety? Gentlemen?
My plea is irrelevant.
What?
Irrelevant.
Well, I don't know about relevancy, but that anxiety that he may not hear me. We may have lost radio contact. This whole thing has suddenly moved from comfort to crisis in one phrase. And chaneni v'aneni, favor me. What's aneni? With a response. Answer me. Why? Because you have just been talking about your relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam so easily, so confidently. It's part of your construction of your place in the world, in society, Ira, if you want, maybe with your soldiers. It's what makes you the general. It what allows you to talk about the whole world while you're on top of the mountain. And all of a sudden, you're not sure that you can even talk to God. This is a religious crisis which is described in Hasidic literature in almost graphic terms. Katnus HaMochim, various terms are used to describe it. Someone who suddenly, precipitously, from being the voice of faith, experiences an inner horror, not of doubt, It's not that he doubts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. It's that he doubts whether he still has access, even at the most fundamental level, the most basic level, to a connection with Hashem. And you'll see how this Al taster ponecho mimeni. We have gone from Ori v'yishi mo'oz chayai to hester ponim in one easy step. Hester ponim means forget about what you'll do for me. I can't even count on your attention. I can't even count on knowing that you hear me. Hester ponim is terror. Al tat be'af avda. Tat be'af. Even if you didn't know a word of Hebrew, it sounds like a smack with the back of the hand. How will this look at the top of the mountain? As the God brat is smacked for taking liberties, making assumptions. And then I'm moving along a little bit. I'm almost out of time. I'll bring you in a moment. Ki ovi vi'imi ozavuni b'Hashem ya'asfeni. To everyone, there are many readings of that verse. But I think one possible reading is, now in this new crisis, he realizes that it would be easier for the me who is a child, it would be easier for me to sustain the loss of my father and my mother if only God would take me in. Because without the Ribbono Shel Olam, I am a cosmic orphan, none of whose other relationships can possibly fill the void. All the people that I spoke to in verses 1 through 6, none of those relationships means anything if the core dies, if I'm no longer connected to Ribbono Shel Olam. And suddenly, you get all of the fears. His world becomes terrifying again. Because as he looks into his world, he doesn't see what he saw before. Machane, lo yirolibi, milchamah, b'zosne, b'teh. All of a sudden, he looks, everywhere he looks, there is whispering and danger. Right? Ki komu v'edei sheker v'feach hamas. Everywhere there are. Now, Ede Sheker means people who know you, right? This is a person who has come to doubt everything in his world as a consequence of the death of the core of humble belief. And so when we find him at the end, the last two verses, we find him stuttering. Lulehemanti, without my belief, and it actually never gets finished. Lulehemanti liros betuv Hashem be'eretz chayim. If not for the belief that I would experience. Now notice, you're no longer seeing the Noam Hashem and the music and the barbecue. Tuv Hashem, evidence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's goodness to me. Tov Hashem Lakol, the simple, the face of Tov, the opposite of Hester Ponim. Without that, I can't finish the sentence. It is unthinkable. It is like that thought so horrible that the screen melts. And then he says, Kaveh Al Hashem. Now, Kaveh Al Hashem, the Malbim has a brilliant comment. He says, there is a difference between the hope one places in God and the hope one places in man. When you hope in man, your hope is to get what you need so that you will no longer need to hope or to trust. the hope in God, the hope which has been fully chastened by this collapse, the hope is that tomorrow you will be able to hope again. Kavel Hashem, chazek v'ameitz libecho, v'kavel Hashem. Never to step outside of the relationship and rely on yesterday's experience of faith to somehow remain intact so that you can go and make it part of your repertoire of social declarations and engagements. The relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, Chazak Me'ametz Libecho, even if it yields a certain courage and well-being, is not meant to be taken for granted. It is meant to lead you back in a tight circle, V'kavei Al Hashem. And tomorrow, wake up. And before you speak to your world, Kaveh Al Hashem, return to a relationship which must be tended, which cannot be allowed to ossify or to crystallize in cliché. And know that fundamentally, that relationship cannot exist independently in social fabric. It cannot be what you talk about. It must be what you endlessly participate in human loneliness and isolation with Ribbono Shel Olam. So if I seem to have offered a saucy reading of the first six psukim, it is not chas v'sholom because I don't stand with trembling before David HaMelech, but because I believe that David HaMelech is creating a caricature of an avodas Hashem, an orthodoxy, if you will, which has become the social discourse of a society which has forgotten how to return to the essence of Kaveh Al Hashem. Thank you very much.